sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. We feel so unworthy sometimes that we don't feel like we have that conscious contact with God. I've heard in meetings, and I felt that way myself. When I say I've heard in meetings, it's because I've done the same thing myself. And I felt I just can't get that conscious contact. I just can't get it. You let me do one little kind thing for somebody, I got it. It isn't all that big a deal. That conscious contact was there. I can feel God pat me on the head too and say, Willie, you did good. That conscious contact's going to be there any time I go one centimeter out of my way to do something for somebody else. Not big. Not a big deal. Might be something simple as holding a door open for somebody. I've gotten a lot of doors slammed in my face since all this women's lib stuff. They don't know I was born in the generation I love for the man to hold the door open for me. So many of them got scowled at that they almost quit holding doors. But just thanking the person, stopping long enough to give him a real thank you, not just, but to give him a thanks. Appreciate it. You can't get too far away from a conscious contact when you're paying attention, when you're being aware of everything around you and everybody that's going to come in contact with you. Praying only for the knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. It says prayer and meditation are our principal means of conscious contact with God. Meditation comes in many forms. Thinking. Meditating means to think. And that's all. It doesn't mean high up on the mountaintop, down by the seashore. But to stop and think, you know, how can I make this day better? It says we AA are active folks, enjoying the satisfaction of dealing with the realities of life, usually for the first time in our lives, and strenuously trying to help the next alcoholic who comes along. So it isn't surprising that we often tend to slight serious meditation and prayer as something not really necessary. To be sure, we feel it is something that might help us to meet an occasional emergency. But at first, many of us are apt to regard it as a somewhat mysterious skill of the clergyman, from which we may hope to gain a second-hand benefit, or perhaps we don't believe in these things at all. But just taking the time in the beginning, if you can't get into the serious meditation, Rose told me, said, well, if you can't get into that, just sit down for a few minutes during the day. 15 minutes here, 10 minutes here. Just sit down for a minute and just think, am I comfortable with myself? Do I feel good? If I don't, what's going on, Willie? You're getting yourself tangled up here. She said, start with that kind of meditation. God knows you're talking to Him. He doesn't have to be formally addressed. Your power knows that you're talking to Him. When you're sitting there saying, you know, what's going on here? Why am I uncomfortable? Do I need to shape up this attitude? Sometimes we think that, you know, I wanted a preacher to pray me well. I wanted him to pray me good, you know. Because they come in. They come into hospitals and places like that, you know. And would you like for me to pray for you? So I just, you know, and a lot of times when we go to church, the preacher prays for us. I love the story of Sister Ignatius that helped so much there in Towns Hospital and attended to Bill and many, many others. She loved drunks. Beautiful little nun. She loved them. She said she was terribly tired one day because fooling with a whole ward full of drunks. And back in those days, they weren't the dainty, pretty little drunks that sometime we make calls on. And they're, you know, not in that bad a shape. But she said she was tired of fooling with those drunk men all day long. And they had made so many demands on her. She was walking through them. They had them just bed after bed after bed. She was walking through. And one of them reached out and grabbed her. That's when they wore the habits, the full black habits, and the beads swishing and swishing. washing. And this drunk reached out and grabbed her habit, and he said, "Sister, pray for me." And she said, before she realized really how tired and spent she was, she jerked his hand away and said, "Pray for yourself. The Lord loves to hear from strangers." And God bless her, she told that on herself. And I just, you know, as we go along in this program, we have various spiritual experience for me has been that when something doesn't go like I want it to, that I still do the right thing. Spiritual experience for me is that little voice that tells me what to do when something goes wrong. I was sitting in a meeting one night, and a man popped up, and he said that he had had a real spiritual experience because he had gone to this concert. And he had gone around and around the block, and sure enough, somebody pulled out right in front of the concert hall, and he just stepped in there and got him a parking place. And that, you know, that was a real spiritual experience, that God had gotten him that parking place. Well, I call that, you know, God of the parking lot, because it's more likely with me that I had to park 5 blocks down the road and go to the concert and come back out and all my wheels on the car are gone. Okay? Let me see how I handle that. I mean, I think God and I have a real good sense of humor thing going here. He's more likely to let me come back and all 4 wheels are gone. Just gone off the car. Now, Willie, what you gonna do? It's how I handle situations that come up that become my spiritual experiences. Multitudes of them, not just one great big womp of a spiritual experience. Very few of us have Bill's vision. Most of ours, and he tells us in here, they're of the educational variety. The way we handle the foul weather, the way we handle all the little mishaps that are going to happen to us. And each time I can get through one of those things, that feel good that I have way down inside of Willie, that's another little spiritual experience for me. And you know, Sam Shoemaker was one of our such good friends, and he told Bill one time, he said, "Bill, you can't stay sober on yesterday's spiritual experience. You have to have a constant renewal of that experience." And that's what he was explaining to Bill, that, you know, he saw the lights and got the instant, and God saw that he got it that way so that he could pass it on and on, clear down to the likes of us. But many of us have these spiritual experiences and don't recognize them if we're waiting for the big, big one. But all the little ones, how did we handle it? Did we handle it like we used to about, well, I'd go out, you know, just leave the car when I was drinking. I'd leave the car sitting right there, you know, and go to the bar and drink at them. At the low-down, dirty son of a guns that took my wheels off the car, I'd just get drunk at them. Now, that wouldn't do me any good. But if I can just, you know, go ahead and tend to my car, either leave it there and have it picked up later. Think, Willie, think. And that's when I have a conscious contact. What's the best thing to do? What's the rational thing to do? What's the best thing that'll leave you in better shape? Conscious contact is not, I thought it was so mysterious at first. I thought it was some sort of a feeling that I was supposed to have that I didn't understand. Never had it. But I didn't realize that it can come in little doses, like good medicine. You don't take 8 pills every day, you just take the one. But it finally gets the illness to go away. A lot of good suggestions if you run into somebody or if you're having trouble with your step 11 and feel that you know you don't know what God's will is. Sometimes time we have to say, you know, what is the best thing I can do right now for everybody's sake? And when you can think of the best thing that you can do in a situation, you better know that's God's will. Because what does He want us to be? The best we can be. Not the best, but the best we can be. And that's when I know that I have, you know, God's will is in my life when I'm being the way He wants me to be. Step 12, we go to our last principle. We can work all these into our lives, into our daily lives. The principle of service. Not New York service, not that kind of service, but to be of utmost service to each other in our Alcoholics Anonymous fellowship and to every other human being that we happen to come in contact with. To be of service. Edmund needs groveling do-gooder. But if we can't do any good, be sure we don't do anything that's detrimental. So service is the last principle that we want. Having had a spiritual awakening as the results of these steps, each one of these principles that we have put into our lives and start working on, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. This first paragraph, and there's beautiful, beautiful things in this step 12. You know, step 12, he did an extensive job in the 12 and 12, just like he did in the big book. Step 12 is the only step that a whole chapter is devoted to in the big book. The only one. Working with others. All about step 12. And a lot of good suggestions that he comes up with in our 12 and 12 that he realized later on would help keep us in this direction that he wanted us to go, and that was to help other alcoholics the way we had been helped, to keep that chain going. And the first paragraph explains it so well. The joy of living is the theme of AA's 12 step, and action is its key word. Here we turn outward towards our fellow alcoholics who are still in distress. Here we experience the kind of giving that asks no rewards. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives so that we and those about us may find emotional sobriety. When the 12th step is seen in its full implication, it's really talking about the kind of love that has no price tag on it. None. That means to me, when I sponsor a gal and she stays sober for me and I get to thinking, you know, hot dog, she's really, and then 3 o'clock in the morning, Willie, and she's drunk. What's my love supposed to be for this girl? It's supposed to be the kind that has no price tag on it. She doesn't have to do. Well, if you'd have followed my suggestion, just you wouldn't have gotten into this mess. You shouldn't have gone back there. Wow. That's the price tag I'm putting on the kind of love that I'm supposed to be giving her. Now, that doesn't mean that you fool away your time over and over, you know, year after year with somebody that is giving you, you know, nothing but drunkenness. But I figure if she's sober 2 or 3 months, that beats what she was before she came into the program. My kind of love for you and for all the people in my life must not have a price tag on it. If I do this for you, you have to be grateful to me. If I'm kind to you, then you have to be kind to me because you owe me. And that gets pretty hard sometimes. You know, I thought we were so unfortunate. I thought I was so unfortunate. When I had to admit that I was an alcoholic, I didn't realize how fortunate. You know, we have the only terminal illness that is immediately irreversible. The only one. We have the only fatal illness that we come out of stronger and happier and braver than when we went into it. Isn't that something? And I thought I was so unfortunate to become an alcoholic. I don't know what this is, but I always end everything. I don't know what this beautiful, beautiful program is. But I end with this piece out of the grapevine. A Canadian wrote it. And it was in a 57, 56 grapevine, somewhere in through there. But I'm going to close with this. And what we've been talking about, what this program really is, I don't know. And I don't think that anybody can ever really tell us what we've had in this room. What we're going to have here all weekend, what we had last night listening to Don. But I think this covers it better than anything. AA is a spirit. It cannot be touched, nor can it be completely understood. It's as wide as the world and yet small enough to fit snugly into the hearts and the minds of man. It's brought light where only darkness dwelt. It's given hope to the hopeless and help to those who yearned in despair. It's nourished forgiveness in those who knew no pity. It's given strength to the weak and humility to the strong. It's spurred to higher goals those who strove for nothing. It's taught patience to the hurried and action to the lazy. To youth, it's given vision, and to the aged, promise. To the lonely, companions, and to the restless, rest. To the sick, it's been a doctor, and to the dying, it has revived the desire to live. It has no judgment against the unteachable, nor has it praise for those who learn. To the outcast, it's been a family, and to the childless, it has given children. To the ignorant, wisdom, and to the wise, tolerance. It's given to all men that which is most precious. It's given a love of life and a love of truth with enough left.